Welcome back to Tailgate Till May. I'm your host, Stephen Gorgi, and with under 50 days to go until college football returns, I am ecstatic to be here to talk some ball. But I'm not alone. I'm joined tonight by my friend and new Tailgate Till May co-host, Brian Kaufman, who's going to be with us all football season long. Brian, how's it going, man?
It's going great. I'm happy to be here. Happy to join the program on a more regular cadence. And yeah, you said it, under 50 days. I feel like the first media day always sneaks up on you. And all of a sudden, you haven't thought about college football in a while. And then you're immediately hearing about Brent Venables and his fire hose on SportsCenter. And you're like, wait a minute, college football's back. So I'm pumped. I'm glad to be here. Thank you for having me. And I'm excited to get going.
So we're like 2 weeks past 4th of July, right? And today's the last day of the baseball season before the All-Star break. Do you feel like you start to feel it? You feel like you're getting ready for football now or not quite yet?
Yeah, I think so. A bit of the dog days in baseball season, right? And so, you know, now that we're through NHL, NBA, and that's about all you got, and that's when you start to get that itch. And so you start to see some coach quotes and you're arguing about NIL and talking to your boosters and how much money you need to be successful. And I feel like it's coming and I'm excited.
I agree, man. And it's like when you start, the conference realignment stuff, yeah, that can be an interesting conversation, but like it feels like I'm ready to start talking some ball.
Yeah, exactly. I want to talk about players, who's going to be good on the field this year. I'm sick of talking about the millions of dollars that Miami is randomly finding to become an elite program again, yada, yada, yada. I want to talk about the season, and I'm excited to do it.
Sweet, let's do it. So, all right, everybody, here's the deal for this upcoming football season. Each Monday when you wake up, a new Tailgate Till May episode with the two of us will be waiting for you wherever you get your podcast. So make sure you subscribe to the show, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, etc. Wherever you get your podcast, we'll be there. And subscribing is the best way to make sure you have that each and every Monday morning for your commute. We're going to be talking gambling, the biggest storylines, P5, G5, you name it, we're talking it. And today, we're going to kick things off with some season previews, starting with the Big 12. So what we're going to do for all of these season previews, we're going to do a little bit of a last season on. You know, it's been a while. You might not remember what exactly happened last year. Maybe next week we'll get some like dramatic music to play underneath, like or maybe like a teen drama, like a little OC music.
The OC, you could throw it back there. Yeah. You could do like CSI, dun dun, last season. There you go.
So we'll have to figure that out. No dramatic music today, but we will do a little bit of a last season on the Big 12. All right, so here we go. 5 minutes or less, last season on the Big 12. So for me, the lasting image of the Big 12's 2021 has to be Oklahoma State's Desmond Jackson desperately diving toward the pylon and coming up inches short as the Baylor Bears celebrated their first Big 12 championship since the infamous one true champion split title of 2014. After going 2-7 in David Aranda's first year at the helm and being picked ninth in the 2021 media poll, Baylor rebounded with a 10-2 regular season, a thrilling conference championship game win, a Sugar Bowl victory, and a number 5 ranking in the final AP poll. Their opponent in the Big 12 championship game, Oklahoma State, had an equally magical year that just may have resulted in a college football playoff berth had Jackson actually been able to find the end zone. These were not your older brother's pokes. Led by a stifling defense that allowed the fifth fewest yards per play nationally, the Cowboys finally got the upper hand on the Sooners after six straight losses in Bedlam. The win eliminated the Sooners from conference title contention and ensured their run of six straight Big 12 titles would come to an end. The Cowboys defeated Notre Dame in the Fiesta Bowl and finished seventh in the AP poll, just the fourth top 10 finish in school history. As for their in-state rivals, the Sooners had what you could only call a roller coaster season. They started the year as the odds-on favorite to win the conference, led by Heisman frontrunner quarterback Spencer Rattler. But early in the year, it was clear things weren't quite right. The Sooners opened the year 5-0, but escaped games against Tulane, Nebraska, West Virginia, and K-State by a combined 21 points. Things came to a head in Red River. Rattler threw an interception and fumbled as the Longhorns raced to a 35-17 first-half lead. Rattler was replaced by highly touted freshman quarterback Caleb Williams, who led Oklahoma to a rousing 55-48 shootout win, and Rattler only attempted 12 passes the rest of the year. It seemed clear Lincoln Riley had found yet another star quarterback, but things weren't all sunshine and rainbows for the Sooners. They ultimately lost a game to Baylor, where Williams threw for under 150 yards, and then lost Bedlam to Oklahoma State. After rampant speculation about Riley leaving OU for LSU, the day after Bedlam, it was announced that he would be leaving, but not for LSU. He'd be headed to LA to take the USC head job. Caleb Williams followed him to USC, as did highly touted freshman wideout Mario Williams, and Riley was replaced by longtime Clemson defensive coordinator and former OU defensive coordinator Brent Venables. Riley's departure wasn't the only coaching change in the conference. TCU and longtime head coach Gary Patterson mutually agreed to part ways after a slow 3-5 start by the Horned Frogs. Ultimately, it was a loss to K-State that was the final nail in Patterson's coffin. They finished the year 5-7, and the once vaunted Horned Frogs defense gave up more yards per play than any team in the country except for UMass. Patterson was replaced by former SMU head coach Sonny Dykes. Texas Tech also made a midseason coaching change following a loss to Kansas State. It was just something about K-State that just ended people's careers last year. So Tech fired Matt Wells after a one-point loss that dropped the Red Raiders to 5-3 on the year. They ultimately reached the Liberty Bowl, where they beat former head coach Mike Leach's Mississippi State team and now former Texas high school coaching legend and Baylor assistant coach Joey McGuire takes the reins in Lubbock. Another coach that many thought could move on to bigger and better things prior to last season was Iowa State coach Matt Campbell. They entered the year led by veteran quarterback Brock Purdy and star running back Breece Hall, and started the year as number 7 in the AP poll, but as is tradition, dropped a week 2 matchup to Iowa. That loss hurt even more for the Cyclones, given that College Game Day was in town. Iowa State finished top 20 in S&P Plus, but close losses derailed their season, and they finished 7-5 before losing a brutal-to-watch Cheez-It Bowl against Clemson. The one silver lining for the Cyclones, though, Matt Campbell is still in Ames. As for first-year head coaches, Texas was unimpressive in Steve Sarkisian's first season, going 5-7, losing 6 of their last 7. But hope springs eternal in Austin once again, as they bring back running back Bijan Robinson, who put up over 1,100 yards and is the preseason offensive player of the year in the conference. The Longhorns also added Quinn Ewers, the top quarterback in the class of 2021, as he transferred back to Austin from Ohio State, a Texas high school legend. Another first-year coach in the conference was Lance Leipold at Kansas. Kansas was, well, Kansas, but did show some signs of life over the last 3 games of the year. They beat Texas by a point, and then they lost one-score games to TCU and West Virginia. Over the final 3 games, quarterback Jalen Daniels completed 71% of his passes, threw for 6 touchdowns, and ran for 3 more. Finally, we'll end things with a pair of coaches who were in their third year in 2021. In year 3, the Kansas State Wildcats were led by a solid defense that finished in the SP Plus top 20, but an unremarkable offense led to a 7-5 year, as they were held under 20 points by Baylor and Texas on back-to-back weeks to end the year, despite 5-6 running back Deuce Vaughn's best efforts. The season did end it on a high note, though, with a 42-20 drubbing of LSU in the Texas Bowl, and the game wasn't even as close as the score indicated. Head coach Chris Kleiman is now 20-16 through 3 seasons, but has high hopes for year 4. The other third-year head coach is Neil Brown of West Virginia, and much like Kansas State, the Mountaineers have been inconsistent over Brown's first 3 seasons, going 17-18 over that time. Last year, the offense struggled mightily behind quarterback Jared Daigie. The Mountaineers started Big 12 play 0-3 and were held to 20 or less points in over half of their conference games. The defense wasn't quite good enough to make up for that lack of offense, and WVU finished 6-6. They scored just 6 points in a bowl loss to Minnesota, and Brown enters a crucial year 4 with the 5th lowest returning production in the country. So that is our last time in the Big 12. Brian, I've talked enough. Let me throw it to you.
Yeah, a great recap. So much to talk about with this conference going into the new year. And so one other thing you mentioned, we're going to do that in each of the previews. And another thing we're going to do is a segment that we're going to call Four Downs. We're each going to ask each other two questions that we think are critical to understanding the conference that we're previewing. So I'm going to get it started. You mentioned that there was some change, and there's change in the head coaching position for three teams in the Big 12 this year. And I would say varied expectations as far as those three go. You mentioned Brent Venables, Sonny Dykes, and Joey McGuire taking over. So I ask you then, Stephen, and I'll give my piece in a bit in case you want to give the pipes a little extra rest, but which first-year coach would you say is in the best position to outperform the expectations that are set on his program simply in year one, this season? Who's in the best spot?
This one was so hard for me, because I was really torn between TCU and Texas Tech. So Sonny Dykes and McGuire. And the reason that I'm between those two is because when you got to think about what the expectations are, right? So for Oklahoma, they're the favorite to win the title, conference title. Their win total is 9.5 wins. Like, it takes a lot to exceed those expectations. And I just don't think Brent Venables might end up being a fantastic head coach there. But in year one, that's a lot to ask, especially given that they lost the Spencer Rattler, who was the Heisman favorite last year at quarterback. They lost Caleb Williams, who ended up being one of the best quarterbacks in the country. I just think that's a tall, tall task for a first-year head coach who loses a lot. So to me, it has to be TCU or Texas Tech. And I'm ultimately going to go with TCU and Sonny Dykes, really because of Sonny Dykes's Sonny Dykes' experience as a head coach at SMU, and then what TCU returns on the offensive side of the ball. So last year, TCU was 38th on offense in SP Plus and 109th on defense. Their defense was what really sunk them. But I think this year, with Dykes' experience and everything that he's done running fantastic offenses at SMU, they could be a top 10 offense nationally. They return over 80% of their production, which is the third most in all of the nation. That's both on the offensive and defensive side of the ball, but particularly on the offensive side of the ball, they of their three running backs who rushed for 400 yards or more last year, they return two of them, including Kendre Miller, who led the nation in yards per carry. They have four players that had 200 or more receiving yards last year. They return all of them, including 6'4 wide receiver Quentin Johnson, who was 15th nationally in yards per carry or yards per catch and all Big 12 preseason. And then at quarterback, I think they have some really interesting options. They have Max Duggan, who he's an experienced quarterback and he's played a lot of games at TCU. And, you know, I don't think he's been the best, but he has improved every year that he's been there. He's improved in completion percentage, yards per attempt, and passer rating every year that he's been there. And I think under Sonny Dykes' guidance, you could see another big jump from him. They also have another good option at quarterback, and because they haven't named Duggan the starter yet, they have Chandler Morris, who's a Oklahoma transfer, and he played last year in a couple games, and actually, the week after Patterson was fired, they went out and beat Baylor with interim head coach Sonny Cumbi. Chandler Morris started. He put up over 500 yards of total offense by himself, and they won that game. So I just think there's so much there on offense that you could see that truly become an elite unit. And look, let's face it, right? We've seen elite offenses in the Big 12 make up for really bad defenses. So if exceeding expectations for them means winning seven games, they're over under 6.5. I think TCU and Gary Patterson, they're the first year head coach and program, I think that can best exceed expectations.
So I wrote down the same. So I agree with you. I think I really, really like, they have 18 returning starters, right? And so it's like, you just try to look for some sort of stability, in my opinion, when you're talking about taking over a program, and yeah, you're putting your stamp on it, but the fact that they have 18 guys who are staying in this kind of era of the transfer portal means that, in my opinion, those guys are ready to buy into a new head coach. I think you're right about Max Duggan. I sort of think Chandler Morris is going to get every opportunity to take that job away. I think Max Duggan always, it always kind of felt like he was outperforming what you sort of expected from him. And Morris might be more of that guy who's like, oh, he's like super talented. That game against Baylor, man, I think he was Big 12 Offensive Player of the Week. He had a couple of passing touchdowns and a rushing touchdown. He's more athletic than you think he was. So I think he's going to get an opportunity to do well too. And not for nothing, and you know, this, if you know, we're going to talk about this a lot in these previews. In hindsight, we might look really stupid, but you just try to find these little advantages. And TCU has five Big 12 home games, which I think is good. You know, at Colorado and SMU and non-con are tough, but I think they're going for a bowl game. Now, if the question was long-term, whose stock are you buying? I might be more inclined on Joey McGuire and the way he's recruiting early on. I know that a lot has been made. You know, they have the quote-unquote number one recruiting class in the country. I don't think we expect that to be the case on signing day, but more of a quantity over quality thing for now. But he does have them, you know, more excited. And long-term, I do think they look good. But I just think TCU has more this year. And so I'm with you. I think with what they have returning, with what Sonny Dykes has done, particularly on offense, kind of everywhere he's been, I'm excited to watch TCU. I do think they're a team. It's so funny. Like, I know there were one of only three options in the question that I pitched to you, but like, they could also win like two games, and I'm not going to be utterly shocked. But I think when you have 18 returning starters, like, the guys know how to be college football players. And I think that that does something for you as you try to put your stamp on a program as a new head coach.
Now, do you think we're maybe underrating what Joey McGuire and offensive coordinator Zach Kittley, who led that record-breaking all-world Western Kentucky offense last year? They were second nationally in points per game. Do you think we're underestimating like what he can come in and do immediately to a Texas Tech team that really, I mean, they weren't bad. They were 5-3 when they fired Matt Wells, and they went out and beat Mississippi State in a bowl game. They beat an SEC team in a bowl game. So like, do you think we're underestimating them a bit?
I mean, there's always that chance. I think for me, I'm looking for little advantages. When you're talking about TCU and Texas Tech and who's going to win more games this year, I think we're probably talking plus or minus a game or two. And so I'm looking at the schedule, and Texas Tech has Houston and at NC State in their non-con. And so I think like there's a legit chance that they start out 1-2 and aren't feeling too hot about themselves going into Big 12 play. Does that make a difference? Do you hit a skid? I mean, I hear you. Like, they could come in and light the world on fire too. I think it's more of just I want to see it before I believe it. And I think I've seen it slightly more from the guys that TCU is going to have on the field. And that's the only advantage I'm giving to them. But you're right. Like, us not picking them, like I said, we might be like, oh, this was funny. We should have absolutely seen this coming. Nobody can stop this offense. I don't think it's unrealistic. I'm just not going to bet on it.
Okay, so let's transition over to the team that neither of us said in that question, because my question for today was, what does Oklahoma, the undisputed king of the conference for the last really decade, what do they look like now that Lincoln Riley is gone and Brent Venables is at the helm?
Yeah, so this is why I love college football. Oklahoma fans were legitimately livid about Lincoln Riley leaving, meaning college football is the only industry where people will act absolutely dumbfounded that you choose to live in Los Angeles instead of Norman, Oklahoma, and be absolutely 100% dead serious about not being able to understand why you'd make that decision. So it's a great question though, because things are going to look different, right? Like, he was getting five-star players out of California, and I don't know that that's something we can expect Oklahoma to continue to do. Lincoln Riley had three playoff appearances in his first 4 years. I don't think you can necessarily expect that to happen with a new coach that wasn't, right, a seamless changing the guard, kind of like it was when Bob Stoops handed off to Riley. And even then, you can't expect it. I just say it gives you a better chance. But you know, I do think he's set himself up for some success this year to be a conference title contender. I think Dylan Gabriel is awesome. I think they kept enough skill position players on offense to be scary. And not for nothing, he's Brent Venables. The defense should be improved, right? Like, they should be better on defense than they've been in years past. It's always kind of been their main bugaboo. But I think in order to maintain this sort of like every year they're in legitimate national title contention and conversation, that's going to take a little bit of work. I think they have a top 10 class. I know they have a 5-star quarterback committed for 2023. He's going to need to do that consistently. And so, like I said, I think he'll find a way to keep, I don't think Oklahoma is going to take some sort of major step back, but I do think in the next 3 to 5 years to expect them to be consistently the preseason favorite, national championship contender, expecting them to be in the Big 12 championship game every year. I think it's going to be tough. I think this year's team is a justified Big 12 title contender and favorite. Beyond that, I would just call myself a little bit in wait and see mode, if you will.
Did you check out the preseason all Big 12 team by any chance?
I have, but I don't have it top of mind. What do you got?
Okay, so this is what stuck out to me in regard to Oklahoma. There is not a single player on the Big 12 offensive first team from Oklahoma.
Wow. Not even Marvin Mims.
Nobody. Nothing. Nobody. That's okay. Crazy, right?
Yeah. I mean, you wouldn't. I wonder when the last time you could say that is, because it's not recent, I would imagine.
So, I mean, when you look at that, you look at not having a single player on there. You look at the players they lost, two quarterbacks that any other team in this conference would love to have either Spencer Rattler or Caleb Williams. They lost some other skill talent Lincoln Riley took with him. So to me, this is not a long-term referendum on Brent Venables and his ability to compete at a high level. But to me this year, I just don't know how. I don't know how they can be the team that they were when they had back-to-back Heisman winners, you know, in back-to-back years, and they were going to the college football playoff every year. I just don't think it's a reasonable expectation for anybody to think that this team is a college football playoff team. Could they win the Big 12? Certainly. I'm not gonna what are the odds on them to win the Big 12? They're plus 200. Okay, so it is still plus odds, which you probably can't remember the last time you got plus odds preseason on Oklahoma to win the conference, right? It had to be minus in the past.
Yeah, you would think so. Yeah.
I just don't feel great. I don't feel great doing it. I do want to talk for a second. Can we talk a little more long-term on Brent Venables?
Yeah, let's do it.
I do think there might be a chance that he actually is a better equipped coach to take them into the SEC than Lincoln Riley might have been. Because what is the SEC all? What is the difference between the SEC and the Big 12 to you?
Well, for a long time, it's been that the SEC plays good and cares about defense.
Yeah, the big bodies up front, right? Yeah. It's big bodies up front and defense. And I think just given his background, given his time at Clemson, given which is obviously not an SEC school, but they play a little bit more of an SEC style, I think that he might be the right guy. Yeah, fair enough. I think he might be the right guy to mold them a little bit more in the shape of an SEC team. Now, don't get me wrong. You talked a little bit about recruiting. I don't know. Within a week of Lincoln Riley leaving, Malachi Nelson, the number two player in the 2023 class, only behind Arch Manning, decommitted from Oklahoma and committed to USC. And Venables was able to replace him with a guy named Jackson Arnold, who is the number 31 player in the class, right? He could end up being a good quarterback. But I do think there's a pretty big difference when you're talking about, they got the number one or two quarterback in the class, almost every year. I don't have it offhand, but I know Rattler was one of the top two. Caleb Williams was one of the top two, and they were spaced out by 2 years. And then they had Malachi Nelson committed, who was in the top two. So every other year they were getting one of the top two quarterbacks. And yeah, that makes a huge difference. But I would also say at the same time, Georgia just won a national championship with Stetson Bennett. I think that when you are talking about the highest level winning national championships, I think it honestly is less about if you have an NFL ready quarterback than everything else around him.
I think you're onto something. I do. I think that's a fair point. I think it remains to be seen, too. Like, yes, Brett Venables is going to be better at recruiting beefy defensive linemen than Lincoln Riley. And Lincoln Riley is going to be better at recruiting five-star quarterbacks than Brett Venables is. And we'll see what they're able to do. I mean, they've got Jeff Lebby in there at offensive coordinator, and he's made some quarterbacks look very good in his career, including Dylan Gabriel before, and also Matt Corral at Ole Miss last year. And so I think you're right. There is a difference between the Spencer Rattlers of the world coming from Arizona to Oklahoma and Malachi Nelson coming from California to Oklahoma and the Jackson Arnolds of the world. But it'll be interesting to see as that transition happens, kind of where they fit in. Because honestly, I would also argue that a lot of the reason that Oklahoma has been able to be this perennial contender is they're not playing in the SEC. They're playing in the Big 12, and they're not playing Georgia and Alabama and Florida and all these teams that can knock you off, Texas A&M, etc. So I think it is going to be interesting to see. It's such an interesting pivot point for the program that has had so much consistency for so long, just given Bob Stoops and then the fact that it was a handpicked successor type of situation. And then kind of threw that out the window. So, you know, I'd be a little nervous if I was in Norman, but I do think this year they're going to be right there. It's a valid point about the guys on the offensive first team. But like you said, they're plus 200, which is the lowest odds. It's like, expect them to be in it to the finish in the Big 12 this year.
I think the final word on this for me is, you know, the over-under is 9.5 on their wins. And I would go over, but I expect them to be a 10-win team. I expect them to be a 10-2 team this year, which is crazy that that's underachieving it by any, you know, by any definition, underachieving expectations. But I think for Oklahoma fans, a lot of Oklahoma fans would be disappointed with a 10-2 season. I think they can get to 10-2 the way their schedule works out. I think they have a really nice schedule. They start off with UTEP and Kent State. They do go to Nebraska, which could be a little bit of a tricky early season game. New coach, lost a lot, rivalry, etc. But their conference road games are at TCU, at Iowa State, at West Virginia, at Texas Tech. So that means they get Oklahoma State at home, they get Baylor at home, they get Kansas State at home, and they get Texas in Dallas. So I think that's pretty much as good as you can ask for from a Big 12 schedule.
For sure.
I think they'll drop some, maybe Kansas State, which seems to be a tradition at this point under Chris Klieman. But I think they can get to 10-2. I think they can win the conference, but I don't think they're a national title contender this year.
I think that's a totally fair kind of way to look at it. You know, you mentioned, going to my second question, they're sort of lacking explosive offensive firepower, at least from an individual contributor standpoint. And so one guy who is going to get talked about a lot this year, he's already been mentioned as a first rounder. He's been very, very effective in his first couple years in Austin, is running back Bijan Robinson, former five-star, and he's preseason offensive player of the year. That's the kind of guy that you're used to seeing on the preseason All Big 12 offensive team. So I think he's a legitimate choice as offensive player of the year. My question for you would be, if somebody's going to not necessarily come out of nowhere, but if somebody's going to challenge Bijan and put up similar numbers and have a similar impact, who would be your pick as the biggest challenger for offensive player of the year in the conference?
I'm so happy this is your third down. So happy, because I've been fired up about this all day. Ever since I saw this was a question, I was fired up about it, because Bijan Robinson should not be the preseason offensive player of the year. It should be Deuce Vaughn. It should be Deuce Vaughn, Kansas State's running back. Deuce Vaughn had more attempts, better yards per carry, and more touchdowns than Robinson did last year. And Deuce Vaughn had the 9th most receptions in the Big 12, and he's a running back. He's a running back. How was he not preseason offensive player of the year? I don't get it. You cannot tell me any metric you look at, Deuce Vaughn is better. Plus, he's a 5'6 beast who's incredible to watch. It's like Darren Sproles Redux.
Yeah. Counterpoint. Bijan Robinson, 1 Lamborghini NIL deal. Deuce Robinson, 0 Lamborghinis driven. Your thoughts?
Look, man, you can drive whatever. He's driving Kansas State down the field every time. Every time they hit the field, he's driving them down the field. I don't know what's the biggest car dealership in Manhattan.
The Little Apple. I don't know. I don't know.
Whatever
probably
it
got,
is.
Like a brand new Kia dealership or something.
Whatever it is, he deserves all of it. This is classic. Even as Texas leaves the conference, even as they're gone, right? It's classic, just Texas-centric. Bias is strong, but
sure.
It's Texas. It's a Texas-centric conference, and it's like Bijan Robinson is getting all this hype, and Deuce Vaughn is sitting right there. More fun, better numbers. That's my guy, Deuce Vaughn, all day.
So, what has to happen for him to be considered, like to overcome this sort of this bias, right? Like, do they have to like be in the legitimate Big 12 title picture? Does Bijan have to like noticeably underperform versus him? Some combo of these things.
I don't know, man. Because like last year, Breece Hall won Player of the Year in the conference, right? And they were not a title contender. They were supposed to be a title contender, but yeah. I mean, his numbers were so outrageous, and he was such a workhorse. I mean, I think realistically, if Kansas State beats Texas and finishes with a better record than Texas, and the numbers are roughly equivalent to what they were last year, I think he'll get it. I don't think there's truly anything like holding, you know, Deuce Vaughn back, but it does just seem like it's always the case in a lot of conferences, right? Like if Texas has a really good player, he's going to get the benefit of the doubt. And make no mistake about it, Bijan Robinson's a really good player. I just think, you know, I think if you look at it objectively, Deuce Vaughn's the guy. But I think they will finish, if they finish better with a better record than Texas, he'll get it.
Yeah. Okay. All right. I think that's fair. Hit me with fourth down whenever you're ready.
I'm ready for you. All right. So the story of last year was the Baylor Bears winning the conference title. In Dave Aranda's first year at Baylor, they went 2-7. Last year, they rebounded, went 10-2, won the conference, won the Sugar Bowl, finished in the top 10. Brian, which Baylor is the real Baylor?
All right. So I like the way you frame this question, because I was going to give you the cop-out answer that was somewhere in between, because that's what I actually think it is. But I think they're closer to last year's team than the year before. I think like it's sort of a pattern we've seen with the program where Matt Rhule came in and you got to lose a little bit before you turn around. And he did that. And Dave Aranda came in and you have to lose a little bit before you turn around. And that's what happened. And I think they're better set up to no time, you know, that's twice in the last decade. I don't think we have another like Baylor's got to rebuild a little bit ahead of us. Now, Dave Aranda, if they win again, is going to be talked about for major, major jobs. But I think it's you sort of create something at a program, and it feels a little bit like he's a program builder. He has that vibe, that kind of serious answer, no nonsense, but the guys really like playing for him vibe. As far as this year, I think they're right there, right? It's like you said, they're at like plus 250 or something. So if you know, they're
no plus.
Oh, they're 600. It's Texas is 250. That's
Texas,
right.
Believe it
that's
or not, right. Is yeah, plus yeah, 250. Yeah,
right. So those are juicy odds for a team that I do think is right there. Now that said, I think there are legitimate concerns on the offensive side of the ball for Baylor this year, losing their top two rushers, losing their top two receivers. New-ish starting quarterback, though he earned it, right? He forced their returning starter into the portal because he played so well towards the end of the year. Blake Sharpen did. And they're generally led by their D anyway. But I do kind of want to see it before I believe it from them on the offensive side of the ball. They also have five Big 12 road games. You talked a bit about how well Oklahoma's home road splits kind of line up. Baylor has to go to Ames, to Norman, to Austin. And so, yeah, those need to be wins if you're going to win the conference, at least two of them probably. And so I think that's tough. But I do think from a program direction standpoint, Aranda's got it rolling. They're doing well. You know, they're not recruiting at quite the national level that I think they want to. But I think they've got it going well. They have some impact transfers coming in. Jackson Player transfers in from Tulsa. He's a big defensive lineman. And he's a Waco native, I believe, too. And so bringing him back home, and they'll be big up front and tough to run on like they always are. And so I think they're right there in the thick of it. And this is a conference to me that really feels like a four or five team race, where like a lot of Big 12 years, it's like, if it's not Oklahoma, I'm surprised. And I don't know who it's going to be if it's not. And this year it isn't that. So, I mean, we're going to get into bets in a bit. But if you're talking about a team where I'm like, they're the defending champs, and they bring back a lot on defense, and they have they're rolling as a program, and you're going to give me plus 600 to run it back. That feels very, very enticing. So I think they're closer to last year than the year before, and I think they'll stay close. And I think it's really honestly very impressive what Aranda's done in just a couple of years.
If you look a little bit beyond this year, I personally think Baylor is the team best positioned in the new Big 12 once Texas and Oklahoma leave. That's my opinion. Where do you think they fit in the pecking order of the new Big 12?
Well, I think it makes sense. I think I spent some time in Waco, and it always did feel like they spend and act like they're one of these big schools, right? They really do. And so getting Oklahoma and Texas out kind of opens the door there, where they are sort of it sounds weird, but they're like the proudest, biggest football programs left. They're right there. And so, yeah, no, I think that makes a ton of sense. And I think, you know, they'll continue to recruit as well as they have. No, I think that's a totally fair point.
Yeah, I always like to look at, I think it's important when you talk about like program rankings or positionings, you got to look at the history. And Baylor has now been able to win in the last 20 years under three different coaches. I think it's a really important factor to say, is this program a coach program, or is there something inherent about this program that makes it advantageous? And I think there was a time where it looked like, okay, Art Briles is this offensive genius, and he figured out how to win in Waco where nobody had in a long time. But, you know, since then, you've had two other coaches come in and win. And it's impossible to mention Baylor football and Art Briles' time there without mentioning the awful sexual assault scandal that occurred while he was the head coach there. And as a result of that situation, the program was in an absolute mess when Matt Rhule took over. And he took it over and he built it up to a really good spot. And then, you know, he didn't leave it in bad shape, but there was still work to do when Aranda came. You know, it's nothing compared to the Art Briles situation. But then Aranda came in and had a little bit of rebuild to do too. So I just think the fact that three different coaches have won pretty big there in the last 20 years tells me that there is some inherent advantage there that enables you to win.
I think that's really well said. They have awesome facilities. Their brand new stadium right on the river. I mean, I think I could, you know, pontificate on what it might be all day, but it feels like a big time football program when you're in the building. They have the Heisman Trophy on display right when you go in. It feels like you are at a major, major college football program when you're walking around those facilities, and kudos to them, honestly, for getting it back where it was before all the crap went down, and it seems like it's sustainable.
All right, let's move on to fourth down. Oh, no, that was our fourth down, wasn't it?
Yeah, right. We're through it.
That's four downs. All right, let's move on to our next segment. So we're going to every week talk about maybe a team, player, coach, program, whatever that we are buying, and one team that we're selling, or one thing we're bullish on and bearish on. So, Brian, I will start with you. Whose stock are you buying in the Big 12?
Okay, so I was trying to find a unique answer here, right? And not necessarily just think of like a new coach or a team on the rise. So I approach this as actual stocks, right? So who right now do you think has a chance to be good, but we're not really talking about for one reason or another? For me, I'm buying Quinn Ewers stock. And so when you talk about Texas quarterbacks, everybody right now is talking about Arch Manning, and maybe rightfully so. And obviously he's not going to impact the team this year, but wasn't it not that long ago that Quinn Ewers was literally a perfect rated quarterback recruit, and his recruiting cycle ended a while ago? He went to Ohio State. He's back home in Texas now. And so for me, this is more, you know, do I think that Quinn Ewers is going to all of a sudden shoot out of the gate, be a Heisman finalist, and lead Texas to the Big 12 championship this year? No, but I think I'm buying low on this now because it would sure seem like, and I think I read a report that Arch is sort of on board to redshirt. So you're looking at 2 years of Quinn Ewers as a starting quarterback. And I think, you know, I need prove it mode from Texas, especially after I've been in on them being back before. But they are stockpiling talent really well. He is recruiting well, particularly right after Arch committed. So for me, this is sort of a buy low move where I'm like, this guy's supposed to be really freaking good. He's got a lot of Xavier Worthy's there, Bijan's there. Their offense should be good if he's anything like he's supposed to be. And so I'm buying low. It's not necessarily buying low. I'm buying while nobody else is talking about it on Quinn Ewers for the next couple of years.
Yeah, I mean, I don't disagree with that. I want to look up his Heisman odds because I bet it's a pretty good price you can get on
yeah,
it.
Yeah, you're probably right.
Because, like, I'm with you on, I mean, okay, so we discard people so quickly in modern college football. Quinn Ewers, he was originally class of 2020, too. He should have been this should be his true freshman year, but he reclassified because he wanted to go to Ohio State. And I think mainly for NIL, the ability to get some NIL deals. And he reclassified, went to Ohio State a year early, didn't play, which is fine, whatever, expected. I mean, they had a ridiculous quarterback who's going to be one of the Heisman favorites this year in Stroud. And everybody's forgotten about him. So, yeah, I like that. I like buying in on him. Now, I can't say like the same for Texas necessarily.
Sure.
Because, sure. I mean, I think they're kind of similar to TCU in a way where it's like maybe they end up being a top 10 offense, but that defense, I cannot get out of my head. They gave up 57 points to Kansas. 57 to Kansas. Yeah. Nearly 60 points to the Kansas Jayhawks. Like, and I think there's a big difference when you're talking about. So for TCU, we're talking about, like, can you be a 7 or 8 win team? But for Texas, we're talking about, can you be a 10 win team? And like, you can outscore people and be an 8 win team. I don't think you can outscore people to that level and be a 10 win team. So like, I can't say I'm in on Texas like that, but I like that. If you're thinking about like who I want to, we got to find out just how
it's 40 to 1.
Okay. So take like, not even a half unit, a quarter unit on Quinn Ewers, one of the 7 players in the history of 24/7 sports composite rankings to have a perfect rating. I don't know. It doesn't seem bad to me.
No, I like it. I like it. Who are you buying?
All right, so I took a little bit more of a traditional route, and I am buying the Kansas State Wildcats. So Kansas State, believe it or not, has the most players at 6 of any team of, I'm sorry, they have 6 players on the all Big 12 preseason team. That is the most of any team in the conference. 6 players for Kansas State. And what I like about that a lot, on the defensive side, they have one at every level of the defense. So up front, at linebacker, in the secondary, they got it all. And the guy I love on their defense was co-defensive lineman of the year last year as a sophomore. And his name is Felix Anyudike Uzama, and he had 11 sacks, 14 and a half tackles for a loss, and his Pro Football Focus grade was just below George Karlaftis, who was drafted in the first round by the Kansas City Chiefs. So this is a first round talent that we're talking about, who is one of the best pass rushers in the country that's going to be leading this defense. We already talked about how much I love Deuce Vaughn earlier. And now, like, this is where I kind of want to get your thoughts on this. And you might say, like, you're insane, but they add Adrian Martinez at quarterback, the guy who's been at Nebraska for a long time, really up and down career there. But I just think in this conference, they are going to present such a unique style with a focus on the running game. You have a running quarterback. You have Deuce Vaughn, who is unbelievably explosive. And last year, they want to play a little bit faster this year under new offensive coordinator Colin Klein, which is a K-State throwback name from the past. But last year, they were dead last in tempo or plays per game. And I think it's a unique thing in this conference where you can have a really good defense, you can have a run-heavy offense that limits possessions, and that's how you find a way to beat Oklahoma 2 times in 3 years. So I'm high on Kansas State. Adrian Martinez has got to avoid the costly pick, which is something he has never been able to do. But I like this team, Brian. I do.
It's an awesome segue to my bear, which I wrote Adrian Martinez for. So I want to talk a little bit about it because I think you're right. And I think, like, I actually would buy the program trajectory. They just got a local 4-star quarterback recruit to commit. Like, I think they are moving things in the right direction. And I think if he's going to mostly exclusively run the ball and avoid the bad pick, he can be successful there. For me, it's just I try to, for lack of a better term, trust my eyes a little bit. And I feel like I've gotten in on him before and it sort of bit me. Now, I think, like, is he better set up for success in Manhattan than he was in Lincoln? Yeah, I think he is. I think it's a much better situation. So I think he's set up for success. There's something that I'm like, if he is to drive you down the field in some sort of situation, I don't think I trust him to do it. Now, I've been bitten on calls like this before because going back to last year, and this isn't going to get me a ton of support from the listeners as far as them believing what I'm saying. Rocky Lombardi transferred from Michigan State to Northern Illinois last year, and I took a similar approach. I was like, I watched this guy. He stunk at Michigan State. He's going to stink again. They didn't win a game the year before. I think they were over under 3.5 wins, hammered the under. They won the MAC championship with Rocky Lombardi as their quarterback. He was incredible. This, to me, is a little bit different because it's not – I mean, I would never knock the MAC. I'm a MACtion aficionado. But I think it is a little bit of a competitive change from the Big Ten to the MAC, and this isn't necessarily that for Adrian Martinez. I guess what I would say is I'm fascinated. It's one of my favorite players to watch early on this season to see if he gets acclimated, gets comfortable in that offense. Because if he does, I do think they can get rolling. But I'm selling my stock because I just think – enough people are going to be like, hey, this might work, then the odds of it not working to me are there, and they're jumping out at me. So, listen, long term, I'm with you on KSU. This year, I'm hesitant on Adrian Martinez. That's just kind of where I come down on it.
I think that's fair. I so badly want to put – so they're 18-1 to win the conference, and I so badly want to do that, and I still might. But he is the reason that I wouldn't. If Skylar Thompson, who I didn't love, but I think is better than Adrian Martinez, he had a lot of injury issues throughout his career. If Skylar Thompson was back for a 6-year, I would feel a lot better about it. But I still do think Martinez does provide some unique aspects. And, you know, sometimes you do need a change of scenery. Sometimes it might just work out for the better for everybody with a change of scenery. So, I mean, I guess that's one where we're kind of on, I'm hesitantly on an opposing side of you. I like what's around him not necessarily him as much, but I guess that's one we're going to have to watch for and see how it plays out. Cause I will tell you this much. I will bet on Kansas State when they play Oklahoma early in the season.
Yeah, I think that's fair. And I think it's worth, would you say it's 18-1 to win the conference? Yeah. It's worth it, right? It's like, and we're going to get in bets in a minute, but I have one too that's like, you sort of need something to fall your way for this bet to hit, but like it's not entirely unrealistic to imagine it happening. Those are the best futures, especially when you're talking about double-digit-to-1 odds. So I like that. But before we get to bets, you've got to sell on somebody.
Yeah, I got a quick sell. So I am going to sell Iowa State. They were really at their highest point last year, and they fell short. They lost a lot of close games, and this year they lose really everything that mattered on that team that made them so good. So they lose quarterback Brock Purdy. They lose Breece Hall, who was just an absolute workhorse. They only have, as far as passing yards coming back, 7% of passing yards, 17% of rushing yards, and 45% of receiving yards. They lose everything that made them special on offense. And then defensively, where they had a really good defense, they only return 31% of their tackles, and nobody that recorded an interception is coming back on their team. So that program is gutted right now. And that's not a program where you just reload. You got to have a slow build, right? They had this slow build where they're supposed to reach this apex, and now it's going to take another slow build for them to come back up. And it just makes me wonder, like, why Matt Campbell is still there, to be honest.
Yeah, it's been multiple off seasons where he was supposed to be the hottest candidate on the market, and it's going to be interesting. I don't know if he missed his window or what, but I'm with you on this one.
You know, I have all the faith in the world he can build it back up. It's just not going to be this year. They're going to be in for a rough one. So let's get some of those bets, Brian. What are you betting on?
All right, so I can see what you wrote and I see what I wrote. And we actually have two of the same ones down. So I want to maybe talk about the one that we don't have written down. And I mentioned when you were talking about Kansas State, something's got to kind of go your way. But is it that hard to see it going your way? So it's very funny that Quinn Ewers' Heisman odds came up in our conversation. Because one of the bets that I would sprinkle is Dylan Gabriel at 30-1 to win the Heisman. Because I think Oklahoma, if there's a team who's going to, in my opinion, like threaten to go undefeated or threaten to be in the national title picture, it would be them. And I think if that happens, it means Dylan Gabriel kind of returned to his UCF form. So we've seen him throw for 8,000 career yards at Central Florida, right? Jeff Lebby was his offensive coordinator at UCF in 2019. We talked about this earlier. He's the OC at Oklahoma. So, yeah, ton of newcomers. You mentioned nobody on the preseason team, but Marvin Mims is a superstar in the making, in my opinion. And when your quarterback is a newcomer, if you can put him in an offense he's familiar with, it sort of might mitigate some of that. And so for me, it's like, okay, we've seen this guy launch the ball. If they're going to beat people, he's going to put up points and numbers. I think it's worth a sprinkle if you're actually looking for a Heisman long shot. I like Gabriel at 30-1 just because if they win the conference, they're probably loosely in the playoff conversation. If they win the conference, he probably outperformed expectations. And at 30-1, that's pretty good preseason odds for a Heisman number. So that's one I'm looking at.
Yeah, that's not bad. I like that. I mean, if you're going to bet anything Heisman, it has to be a quarterback.
Yeah.
And in my opinion, you should be looking for double digits. So right. I like that. Man, I think that's a good one. For me, so this is a little bit of a cop out. But I am going to be looking to bet early in the season, both overs for TCU and Texas Tech. So I'm not loving, to be frank with you, all these preseason win totals, I'm not loving a lot of them, but I'm trying to think about like week one, week two, what can I go into the season thinking I have a bit of an advantage on? And I think it's going to be Texas Tech and TCU over unders. I'm going to be hammering those overs. So, you know, one of the things I think is really important to talk about when you talk about gambling is understanding where the lines are generated from. And in large part, it's coming from computer numbers, and it's numbers similar to FPI, similar to Bill Connolly's SP Plus. And if you look at SP Plus right now, Texas Tech is projected to be 30th in offense. But we talked about the changes they make from a coaching perspective, bringing in a new offensive coordinator who is known for getting back to that traditional Texas Tech style, you know, air raid offense. So I think they're a little undervalued there from like what they're going to provide on an offensive perspective. And we already talked about how I think TCU can perform as a top 10 offense. So I'm going to be looking to hit those early. And then one other thing we got to talk about, we haven't talked about this team at all, and they deserve to be talked about, is Oklahoma State at 6-1 to win the conference. So this is a team that they did lose a lot on defense, but they were one play short and they were inches short of winning last year's Big 12 title. They are, at this point, there is no team with more consistency from a head coaching perspective than Oklahoma State and Mike Gundy. And to me, like in times of great transition and flux, the teams that you want to bet on are the teams with consistency. And right now that is Oklahoma State with Gundy and his consistency. Now I know they lost their defensive coordinator, but you know, Mike Gundy has been there for years and years and years. He finally has gotten over the hump with beating Oklahoma. Lincoln Riley leaves. Like, why not put a little money on Oklahoma State at 6-1?
Yeah, I think that's totally a really smart thing to do. Spencer Sanders too, right? Like, he's been the starter there for like 9 years. He's actually one of only 7 Power 5 quarterbacks that was a 2019 starter and remains at the same school. And so this, you're talking about consistency that doesn't happen. And so, you know, I've always sort of had my doubts about him too, as far as throwing a backbreaking pick and leading a game-winning drive. But you're talking about so much experience under your belt that You're right. You're looking at these 6-1 teams. Those are the teams to bet to win the conference, in my opinion, in the Big 12, because they played in the conference championship game a year ago, and you're not talking about a ton of turnover, especially when you have more turnover on the teams that are shorter odds. So yeah, I like the idea. I think Oklahoma State's going to be right there again.
So take your pick right now on those two. Would you of the two 6-1 teams, Baylor or Oklahoma State? Which one are you putting your money down on?
Oh man. Give me Oklahoma State. I like the consistency. I like a quarterback who I know what I'm going to get. I don't think, like, if Blake Shapen becomes everything they hope he is he Spencer Sanders? I don't know if that's true. And so, yeah, they lost a defensive coordinator. I think they lost 7 starters on the defensive side of the ball. But I think that that's a side of the ball we can trust them on more than we used to be able to. And so, yeah, give me Oklahoma State.
Fair enough. I think I will actually go with Baylor, and not just for the sake of disagreeing. What I think what Baylor lost, like when people look at that team, they're like, oh, they lost a lot with Jerry Bohannon. But Shapen, we saw him step in at the biggest moments and perform. Now, could it be a DJU situation where he steps in against Notre Dame, he looks amazing, and then he has the reins for a full year at Clemson last year, and it doesn't look anything like it? It's possible, and they don't return. You know, they got some questions at running back, but with that offensive line and what they return there, they're just going to be so stout. I like Dave Aranda a lot. I like the culture that he's built there. It seems like it's a real, like, this is so cliche, but it's just like a next man up mentality at Baylor. So I think of those two 6-1 teams, I will go Baylor, but I would feel better. Let me put it this way. I would feel way better betting either of those teams than I would Texas at +250.
100%. I'm shocked that that's there. That, I don't know, that they must have set those 40-1 Quinn Ewers numbers, and they're chasing them or what? I don't know.
Were there any other season win totals that you were liking?
Oh man, well, I'd like to look at some teams we didn't talk about. West Virginia, it'd be interesting with JT Daniels coming in, right? And they always seem to have like electric skill position players, and now they got a quarterback that it seems like you could trust, and so. I mean, it's not super juicy at -130, but I could see them winning 6 games. I don't have their schedule in front of me, but I just so happened to open to the exact page, so that's really impressive. They do start at Pittsburgh, but Kansas is their second game, Towson, at Virginia Tech. So at Pittsburgh, at Virginia Tech, and the non-con is tough, at Texas immediately after, at Virginia Tech. But they get Baylor and Oklahoma and Kansas State all at home. I would take the over on 5.5 with West Virginia. I don't hate that.
If forced to pick on that, I'm going under. They have the, let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, fifth lowest amount of returning production of any team in college football. I hate that. I was a huge believer in JT Daniels before last season. In fact, this is a little bit like Ghost of Gambler's Past coming back. But like this is what I did, dude. Dude, I don't even know if you know about this. I decided before the season, you know, I love Georgia, right?
Yep.
I love Georgia before the season. I was like, I think this is their year. And instead of betting, I was like, no, let me maximize my odds on Georgia. Let me bet JT Daniels to win the Heisman instead of Georgia to win the national championship. Because I'm like, I think he's the difference in that team. He had a great finish to the season 2 years ago. He's going to go out. He's going to win the Heisman. They have a great defense. And like, he's just going to be one of those quarterbacks that he wins the Heisman because he has a really good year and he's on this amazing team. And lo and behold, yeah. So
that's a tough one to swallow.
Yeah, it sure is. But like, I think there's no doubt he will be the starter all year there.
Yeah.
He has talent, but I just think there's just not enough around him. So I'm just saying, I don't know. I really just don't like a lot of these totals, especially because of the way it's juiced. Like, I do really like Baylor. So Baylor, for example, I see it at 7.5, but over is the way I like, and it's -150. Like, it's not worth it.
Right. It's not. Yeah, I mean, they're doing this all on purpose. I hope in future preview episodes we get a little bit more bettable lines, because they got us here in the Big 12.
Okay, one that I may like, this is just like total sicko bet, Kansas over 2.5 wins.
You like the over?
I like the over.
They're moving in the right direction for you, huh?
Well, look, did you hear my last season on the Big 12? I mean, did you hear what I said about how they ended the season?
Yeah, yeah. They beat Texas. They're playing well. I mean, let's see.
So
They
start off with Tennessee Tech. Okay, that's going to be a win.
You hope so.
And then they have a winnable game against Duke at home September 24th.
Okay.
If you get those two, then you got you got eight more games to get one somewhere along the way. Maybe TCU at home. Maybe,
Gotta skip about a month there before you can look at another one.
Maybe TCU, maybe at Texas Tech. I don't know. Okay. All right.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
It's hard.
Well,
it's hard. But okay, what if I wish they had West Virginia later in the season, because I feel like it could really get to a spot where West Virginia is just like done, they've given up, and then Kansas gets that win there. But you know what? They can always beat Texas.
Yeah, that's probably actually Texas at the end of the year. Texas goes to Kansas and can't get it done.
If there's one thing we know about Kansas, they can always beat Texas. But,
that's right.
You know, looking at that one closer, I think I'm going to have to stay away from that one too. So, no, not really liking any of these total win totals for the season, which is fine. I'm just going to try to use what we talked about here to really be sharp early in the season. And for me, that's Texas Tech and TCU overs to start the year.
I'm with you on those. Great bets. Let's do it.
Awesome, man. Anything we didn't touch on Big 12-wise before we get out of here?
Oh, I don't think so. Let's think. We hit Arch Manning. We hit Baylor, Oklahoma, Oklahoma State. You're all over Kansas State. You're Adrian Martinez's his biggest fan.
Yes, sir.
So, I think we're good. It should be an exciting year. I'm excited to keep these going.
Well, that's our show. We'll be back next week to preview the ACC. And until next time, keep your grill hot and your cooler cold.